This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 14th of February. Listen to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. If you want to get involved with today's show, then here are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And I'm joined in the studio today by Jerry Hagan and Tim Stafford. But first of all, we're going to be looking at the front pages today, this Tuesday, the 14th of February. It is Valentine's Day, love is in the air, etc. Anyway, let's move swiftly on with that one. The mysterious objects in the sky appear on many of today's front pages. Daily Mail says Rishi Sunak is under growing pressure to take a harder line on China, with Conservative MP saying he should formally designate Beijing a threat. The Eye says that Chancellor Jeremy Hunt says the row is leading to calls to increase defence spending. Former military leaders are quoted as saying a failure to do so would also embolden Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Times reports the RAF will examine intelligence gathered by the US military to see if it can improve its quick reaction force. According to the Daily Telegraph, the use of Chinese-made drones by British police forces has provoked security fears within the government. The paper says that more than two-thirds of the drones are made by a Chinese firm that is blacklisted in the US. Telegraph's leader column questions whether adequate safeguards are in place. Daily Star picks up on the admission by a US Air Force general that he was not ruling out aliens. Its front page depicts E.T. Its editorial describes the comment as a major step forward in our dealings with the extraterrestrial. There is dismay in the Express that millions of households face the maximum possible council tax increase. The paper says it's a further blow to those already hit hard by higher bills. Its editorial acknowledges that council's budgetary pressures are down to funding shortfalls, but argues that spendthrift authorities are culpable too. The online-only Independent has an article by a former CBI president who declares Labour to be the party of business. It says Paul Dreschler, who was also an advisor to David Cameron, showers praise on the party, something it describes as a hammer blow for the Tories. The Guardian leads on a former Metropolitan Police officer, Wayne Cousins, pleading guilty to charges of indecent exposure. The offences happened days before he kidnapped and murdered Sarah Everard. The paper says detective missed a clear chance to identify him as a potential sex offender. On its front page, the Times reports that water companies privately lobbied to weaken the government's tougher sewage rules. It suggests that they argued that the £56 billion plan to reduce sewage spills from storm overflows risked adding hundreds of pounds to household bills. It quotes various objections the companies raised, such as opinion polls indicating that inflation was a greater concern from the public than the environment. The paper's editorial argues that if Britain is to enjoy the levels of water quality that many other European countries take for granted, then customer bills must be permitted to rise. And finally, The Telegraph suggests that a new Brexit deal could be announced within a fortnight. It's been told by sources in both Brussels and London that a pact has been thrashed out. The paper suggests progress has been made because the UK watered down its hardline resistance to European judges ruling on issues in Northern Ireland. Downing Street, it says, has stressed that elements of an agreement are still moving, but did not deny that an announcement was expected soon. Those front pages again from the top today. Top of my paper pile this morning is the Daily Telegraph. Police use of Chinese drones risks UK security. Meanwhile, The Guardian, police miss chances to arrest cousins as sex offender suspect. The Daily Mail, Rishi, RAF are ready to shoot down spy balloons. The Times exposed the secret plot to sink tougher sewage rules, and they also lead on the RAF ready to shoot down Chinese balloons. Daily Star, we can't rule out aliens. Meanwhile, Daily Express, millions face maximum council tax hikes. The Sun, cost of living it up as Brits struggle with bills. Energy bosses send 100 reps to the Maldives. This is an exclusive in The Sun, saying that an energy firm threw 100 reps to a paradise island on an all-expenses-paid trip. Meanwhile, the Eye hunts urge to boost defence spending or risk failing to deter Putin. The Metro, strong, fearless, one of a kind. And the Metro leads on tributes paid to 16-year-old Brianna Gay, who was stabbed to death in a park in Cheshire. The Daily Mirror leads on Kenneth Noy, who stabbed Stephen Cameron to death in an attack on the M25 in 1996. Claiming exclusive, the paper says that Noy, who was released from prison in 2019, has said he is not a threat to Cameron's partner, Danielle Cable, who went into witness protection after Noy was convicted. FT leads on overseas bets on Vodafone Mount as Liberty Global takes a £1.2 billion stake. And those are your headlines. This Tuesday, the 14th of February.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And joined in the studio this morning by Tim Stafford and Jerry Hagen. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. On this most romantic of days, and may I say, I'm so glad you both, gentlemen, made the effort. You shouldn't have.
Yeah, it's romantic rumour in though.
Exactly. Right then, quite a few bits and pieces to be flicking through this morning. And who would have thought? Who had on their calendar for things to happen in 2023? Asteroids, maybe elections, perhaps, but little green men, UFOs, not discounting aliens. A US Pentagon spokesman said, did you have ack Mars attacks on your crib sheet, Jerry?
No. I have a thing about this in science, a lot of science fiction. The amount of energy and resources needed to cross half the galaxy to come over here and have a balloon over Canada and the US just seems ridiculous. And when I'm talking about science fiction, anytime I see a movie that says attack on LA, you mean you travelled halfway across the galaxy just to attack Los Angeles? That's just ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You're just too lazy to get out and about. You got no budget to go anywhere else.
Tim, do you think we should be worried about the latest findings? Are you convinced there's an intelligent life out there? I don't mean in San Pedro. I just mean just sort of generally.
Am I convinced it's an intelligent life? Yes, I am, actually, because the sheer numbers of alternate galaxies suggest that there probably are a different life forms out there, but I don't think they're making balloons out of plastic and floating them over various parts of the world, no.
There's the old saying that the fact that there is intelligent life out there is backed up by the fact that none of it has contacted us yet, so that's basically...
I agree with Kim, statistically, the 100 million... stars in our galaxy, 100 million galaxies. But the problem is the universe is vast and you can't travel faster than the speed of light apart from in science fiction. So it takes hundreds of years to get to, and even if you detected a planet with potentially intelligent life form. How would you ever get there? And the fact that they could come here and attack us is just ridiculous.
One of the interesting things that has come up through a couple of the people I've been following on the dreaded social media is the fact that the reason that these balloons seem to be sort of de rigueur at the moment, and there's one on the TV as I speak, is the fact that NORAD, which is the American Defense System, has changed its algorithm, apparently. So it means that they weren't really looking for these before, but now that they've changed, they're saying, suddenly think, oh gosh, there are more of these up there than we thought.
Yeah, they said they changed the filters because mainly we were looking for planes and missiles, and now finding car-sized balloons. But I don't understand why the balloon... they were octagonal shaped and had strings hanging from below them. Why would they must have dropped something somewhere?
Yeah,
maybe it's just Colombian drug lords with a new way of delivering the cocoa product. Well known.
Well, yeah, but from 12 miles up, I mean, that's you've got to be pretty desperate. for your delivery to get up there. But interesting, interesting indeed. Good morning to Richard, who says, if aliens were looking for intelligent life, if aliens were looking for intelligent life forms, they'd be very disappointed when-if they get here. But I suppose it just goes to show that there is an awful lot of... there's a surveillance going on out there. I mean, an old-fashioned way. I mean, it's low-tech. Yeah, I suppose you could say by having balloons floating up there, but they've probably been doing this for decades, and because it's considerably cheaper than sending up a U-2 spy plane.
Yeah.
I think, when I was a little boy, they used to suggest that satellites were able to read a newspaper from orbit.
Yeah.
Which is almost nonsense, but you tend to think, oh, it's going to be to do with satellites. And in fact, in a way it is, because I'm led to believe that these balloons send coordinates to satellites to indicate where the missiles might be emanating from close range, as it were. That would make sense, but it is very low tech, as you say.
The advantage they have over satellites is A, they're cheaper, but B, satellites are moving at speed. So if you want to look at an area, you can only look at it for about 5 minutes and then it's over the horizon, whereas a balloon can hang around there forever. But I was surprised at the general thrust of the story. I thought countries were spying each other for decades. It was going on all the time. I still remember the B-52 bomber shot down in Russia.
Yeah.
The American one.
Gary Power.
That was the 60s or something.
Yeah.
But they've been spying on each other forever, and if they weren't, you'd think they were amiss in not spying.
Well, exactly. They've been saying, why haven't we got a balloon up there? And the other thing is, of course, somebody said that there's sort of been this we know that you're spying on us, but we're spying on you, because you can't think that the Americans, the British, and all the rest of them haven't got something up there looking at Russia, looking at China. And so there's sort of been a sort of gentleman's agreement that we won't mention it if you don't. So somebody's having a go by shooting this one down.
Yeah.
The Republicans were giving Biden a hard time for not shooting it down right away, and he waited till it was off the Carolina coast. But then it transpired that that happened during Donald Trump's time, and he never ordered them to be shut down. So, I really don't understand what's going on in politics and military and spying, etc. What are the rules of engagement?
Yeah, indeed. And also the other thing is, it seems to be, this is China, and China is coming in for an awful lot of, I was going to say a lot of flack, but that's perhaps not the best, not the word to use. But again, it's the relationship because China has been sending these over Taiwan as well, and there's another kettle of worms or a can of worms that can be sort of upset with that one with Taiwan, and people have been warning that Taiwan is in next in line for Chinese intervention, as it were. And now we see these reports today about the UK government buying Chinese hardware for its police drones, and then thinking, oh well, it's going to be quite safe, and they couldn't possibly do anything as dastardly as have the Trojan horse type systems in there, which could report back to Beijing.
I don't know enough about the technical arrangements, but there's two things. One is they could be sending things back to Beijing, but also they could be used as a source of putting bugs into other software somewhere else, because obviously those drones are going to send electronic signals to some sort of computer system. Could they carry a Trojan horse? That's all different reasons. And it's interesting, the Americans won't use them, but we are.
Indeed. And there was also saying that there was also a report about 2 weeks ago saying that, you know, even sort of Chinese household appliances could be, you know, your lampshade or your light fitting could be containing something. So we're getting very concerned about what's happening with it. Yes, well, I know you're
my
holding
iPhone,
your phone.
My iPhone's made in China, the hardware.
Well, I mean, ever more. I mean, because we are so reliant on systems like these and phones and all the virtual world that there is, it's all very prone to suggestion by governments. I mean, also, why suddenly are the news of these balloons arriving? I mean, is it that somebody managed to photograph one, or is it that it's some sort of expediency that whatever government or whichever power decides, I don't want to sound like any of your listeners particularly, but
first rule of showbiz, don't insult your audience. First rule of viewpoint, absolutely. Have a pop.
Why suddenly this arrives in our news when perhaps, as it seems, it's been going on continuously for a very long period of time.
952 78 4000 is the phone number. If you want to get involved, you can also WhatsApp me on +34 645 9967 95. Studio at tre.radio is the email. And the Facebook page, if you want to send a post, is Talk Radio Europe Official. I'm here in the studio with Jerry Hagan and Tim Stafford. We'll be back after this break.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
952 78 4000. Love to hear your thoughts on spy balloons, China technology, or anything else. Give me a call, 952 78 4000. This is your chance to put your viewpoint across here on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. A couple of WhatsApps coming in already. This presupposes a gentleman is involved in such agreements. Talking about a gentleman's agreement, and also backing up the points that made before. Chinese have already done that. Huawei phones and routers. Those are some of the points coming in. Let's move away from eyes in the sky, if you will. And let's just have a quick mention the situation that's been happening. And we got a call on the line, 952 78 4000. Just bring this caller on. If I can see the screen, there we go. Thank you so much. 952 78 4000. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. How are you? Are you all right?
I'm very well, thank you, Jason. And yourself?
Not so bad. I reference these balloons. I wanted to differentiate between the balloons and whatever else. Okay, so this is correct. So basically, China's spying with balloons. America probably does the same with China. And they got caught with their pants down. So they recalibrated their monitoring systems, radar, and happened upon something else. Correct? That's about right so far. Okay.
Yep.
The problem is that before they've even recovered the things, instead of bringing the things out of the sea, yeah, where they still are, before analysing all the facts, right, the horse, the cart has been put for the horse, and it's more synonymous with a public relations exercise, or it's nothing extraterrestrial. Well, maybe it's not, but what's really strange is that this announcement's made before they've been recovered, and also on the back of the quite sensational announcement, you recall it from the, was it Defense Secretary of America, when questioned, were these off-world? He said, I'm not ruling anything out for reasons of security known or unknown. So the problem here, instead of waiting to collect the evidence, the announcement's been made hasty. So you can't evaluate something if you've not seen it, right? So, and I draw your attention back to something called the Brooke Report, which was made in the 50s. I think it was post-Roswell. It was a government commissioned report to assess the reaction of a world, both economy and populace, if the announcement was made of aliens. And the conclusion was that it would cause panic, fear, hysteria, and would absolutely destroy hedge funds, pension system, world economy, because the world would go into panic. And it was decided the best thing to do is shield a world from worry and concern. And the last thing you do is shout aliens, all right? So that And that was proved by the War of the Worlds thing that was played on the radio. People caught it mid-broadcast, actually thought it was real, and started panicking. So the Americans, I don't believe anything that comes out of their mouth. Having said, having made tanks that were designed for war and then were not practical for war, because apparently the buggies, the banana splits used, were more efficient. And if the aliens do invade, I think I'll consider it a rescue mission. So I just wanted to wear caution and ask the question, why is there need to dispel something before you've analysed the facts? If there's not, it might be nothing, right? But why feel the need to jump to a decision if there's not another motivation? Roswell, they were not balloons. They announced it and then backtracked and said they were balloons. Have we got the same thing going on now? That's what I want to leave you with that.
Thank you for that one, Jason. The thought of the banana splits being sent into the Donbass will stay with me for the rest of the day today, Jason. So thank you very much for that. And I do like a good 60s Saturday TV reference in Viewpoint. Thanks for that. So are we leaping to conclusions and going, oh, well, it's obviously not little green men, when in fact, as Jason says, you know, we are too quick to dispel the unusual, the occult, and the extraterrestrial.
We're too quick. There's an old saying, we've taught in medical school, if you see a bird on the wall, it's much more likely to be a sparrow than a canary. So, in other words, the simplest answer is probably the most likely to be correct, but you can't rule everything out, as that general said. But I think he was just making a point. He's not ruled anything out. It was in no way he was claiming it might be alien.
Yeah, he didn't give a knowing wink to the press conference.
I think that might be press spin on that. Oh, that's a good headline to put up.
Exactly. Well, the star has got away with it. Yes, Jason said it was proved in the War of the Worlds. Wonderful. Comes in one of the WhatsApps, 952-78-4000. If you've got any thoughts about, I might go out and buy War of the Worlds, the double album, this weekend in anticipation of that one. Right, let's move away. Oh, it's not aliens, as one of your guests said, why would they use a balloon? Ah, you see, it could be a cunning rouge, as my makeup artist said, Tim. Yes.
Yes, I think, the plastics from which these things, or the materials from which these things are manufactured, and the stanchions, shall I use a technical term?
Oh, you can indeed. What on earth is a stanchion, Tim?
Well, it's something that holds material.
I never knew I had such a...
Exactly.
A Montgolfier brother in the studio.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously manufactured wherever they were manufactured, from some plastics factory in Beijing or somewhere.
Ooh,
should be easy to detect, and obviously not coming from Uranus or Mars or some such
any planet. Other planetary body. Yeah. Let's move.
Thank you for that thought on Valentine's Day.
Thank you. You can put a rose in it, doesn't make it a vase, etc. You know what we're saying. Right then, moving swiftly onwards, and I think we should. Let me just give the numbers if you want to call in about your own experiences with little green men or whatever else.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
A million more ways to get in touch with us, of course, if you wish to. We haven't been invaded by little green men by lunchtime. Right then, let's move on from this. Let's go to the situation in Turkey/Syria. It's obviously still reeling from the effects of the horrendous earthquake. Over 30,000 people confirmed dead. However, and this is an interest. This makes you pause to think, because this, you know, we saw the photographs. We saw the photographs of rescue. We saw that harrowing picture of the father holding the hand of his dead teenage daughter in the rubble. And it turns out that he'd asked for that picture to be taken. It wasn't because the photographer who took it came over some abuse on social media, as you would. But the father said he wanted it taken so it would convey the full horror of the situation. But a week on, many newspapers and TV programs have pushed the story further down the news agenda.
few of the broadsheets in the UK have the story this week. Financial Times preferring the Chinese surveillance balloons. Scotsman going for a proposed ban on alcohol ads. And the Times kicking off with the new clean waterways campaign. However, agencies are saying that the best chance that the people who have been affected by this natural disaster stand is for this to be front and center of all our news broadcasts, because it's not a quick fix. It's a long situation. And as you've seen in Syria, which is a country which has obviously been going over a decade of horrendous civil war, their situation is even more dire for those in Turkey. And it begs the question, are we panel now in a situation where basically, we have the attention span of a day or 2 days, a couple of pictures, your thoughts and prayers with the people affected, and then we move on. Are we so desensitized to this, or is our media so desensitized that we only look at that? Oh gosh, look at that, and then the next thing, there's another problem. There's something else to capture the attention. Thoughts panel.
I think there's something about being human and all that. I understand what you're saying, but people do get compassion fatigue. That's possible. That's one part of it. I think newspapers need to tell you news, and if there's nothing more happening, for example, on TV this week, the Sky News sent a whole team out there. And trying to find out anything else going on in the world was tricky, because Sky was spending all the time showing you pictures from Turkey, etc. And, well, yeah, but what else is happening in the world? Your brain, goes to that as well. The problem is, there's several problems here. First of all, when you see the pictures, you can't believe only 35,000 people are dead. There must be a lot more than that. I mean, it's devastating what's happened. Secondly, the next bit is actually the more important bit now, because there's millions of people with no homes. How are you going to build those homes again? The mental stress they're under, they're cold, need water, need food. Who's going to bring all that? And talking of water, you'll get diseases coming in next, typhoid, cholera, all this other thing, because there's no sewage, no sanitation. And this is when they really need help. And that's the dilemma, because the interest has waned. Now, maybe at governmental level, interstate level, EU, United States, etc., will still take an interest. But from newspaper's point of view, nobody's going to buy a newspaper headline because it's got another story about Turkey or Syria. But if they see something else, might buy the paper. That's just an umbrella way of looking at it.
Yeah, the sensationalist reporting, which has always been the case with newspapers, they will pick up on the items that sell most newspapers, but that the agencies that are in place to perform rescue in these dreadful situations are always there. That's our humanitarian side, that these organisations are, to some extent, funded, but also need additional resources at all times, really, to be in readiness. The thing is that after a period of time, what's it been, 7 days, or six, 7 days, the chances, the hope that one might find survivors is diminished. Not completely lost yet, but certainly diminished. And then, as has been said by our dear doctor friend here, that it's a rebuilding and survival after that. Something to do with the government there. It's very cold. The resources in terms of amenities and so on are very lost. So now that's the priority now. Is that for news? I don't know. But such is the fickleness of our press and media.
Indeed, and also there seems to be President Erdogan of Turkey has been coming in for criticism from his people for being slow to respond to the situation. It also seems that we tend to need somebody to blame in these situations. There seems to be, it's got to be somebody's fault. And this was an 7.8 on the Richter scale. The Richter scale goes up to 9.
Huge,
So there are situations where you can't blame people because it's an act of God, of whatever understanding you have of the supreme being. But there are things that you cannot guard against, you cannot predict, you cannot insure against.
Well, it's the guys involved in construction. So talking about blame, they've already arrested over 100 building contractors or people who were doing it. But the regulations in Turkey were up to a certain level, I can't remember what it was, about 7 or something, and that was meant to be a 1 in 2,500-year event. This earthquake exceeded that, so even if the constructed buildings properly, a lot of them are still going to come down because they're only built to an earthquake that happens once every 2,500 years. But this one was worse than that. So, perhaps some of the buildings or a lot of the buildings were not constructed properly. But even if they had been, there'd been buildings coming down. But now they're blaming the guys who built it. So Erdogan is trying to pass responsibility, but you can understand the anger. I mean, the rescuers, the teams going into rescue, they're having trouble because of all the fighting going on. I mean, just civilians fighting. I don't mean Syrian war, because they've got no food, they've got no water, their family, you know, they're getting very angry. And you can understand why that would...
952-78-4000. Some of the WhatsApps coming in. Erdogan is partly to blame, though. The quality of the buildings are shoddy at best. Japanese buildings seem to handle earthquakes well because they are built to a higher standard. And I'm coming in saying Erdogan is a crook. Despite all of this, he's still very likely to win the election. We know that obviously Japan perhaps more technologically advanced, does more research into this, and has a reputation because, you know, of...
I used to work in Tokyo a lot, and you get earthquakes regularly there, you know, and you'd be in the bar and you'd have to put your hand over your glass to stop the liquid coming out. It's like turbulence on a plane. But the Japanese paid no attention whatsoever. I mean, one time in the bedroom, I thought somebody had slammed my back and it was an earthquake. And then the buildings that construct, the high-rise buildings, they have videos showing you how much they can sway and treble without ever coming down. And they build to that high standard. But they're... per capita, they're a richer country than Turkey. I mean, so they can't again do it. And I mean, the earthquakes are regular in Tokyo.
Yeah, and the flexibility of those buildings that I just mentioned there in Japan, obviously preventing a lot of a total collapse, is almost certainly a money related thing that they can afford to build at those high tech levels. But if you looked at, let's say, around the Gulf of Mexico, where you get tremendous cyclones coming through and so on, it would make perfect sense to build buildings that are shaped like, let's say, limpets, which you see commonly clinging to rocks and unmoving, whatever the storm. And but, of course, that would be extremely expensive and use up a lot of space per home.
Indeed. And also, you know, you couldn't have your limpet condo overlooking the Gulf of Mexico. Wouldn't quite be the same, would it?
It wouldn't quite be the same. It would be a very strange way to live, but it would be very effective in very difficult weather conditions.
You know, in the Caribbean, there's a much cheaper way of dealing with it. I didn't solve it altogether, but you don't make a roof like a normal roof. You make it in different shapes, so the wind will swirl around it and not take the roof off. It gets turned and twisted. So when you're there, you'll see really odd-looking roofs because of that, because of the way it goes. There's different engineering solutions, different problems, but you have to work... The Turks have to work within their economy, and if their buildings, if that earthquake exceeded a 1 in 2,500-year event,
yeah,
they were never going to build that good.
Yeah, there are, like I said, there are some things that you cannot predict or insure against or build against, because there you just think, oh well, because I mean, we've been talking about California dropping into the ocean for almost 100 years now, and you know, people know in San Francisco that they're due the big one, but they've been due the big one for what, 30, 40 years now.
Well, it's kind of like return on investment or risk assessment. Suppose in England in the winter, you get a bit of snow and all the motorways grind to halt because they don't have enough snowplows, etc. But that doesn't happen in Canada or America because they have millions of them. But there's no point in Britain having millions of snowplows sitting around that you use really basically once every 5 years. So it's what you pay for and how much risk assessment do you put on these engineering problems.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Professional. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95 if you've got any thoughts on this or any other topic you want to talk about with a viewpoint. Love to hear from you this morning. Good morning to Diego and Laura listening in via the internet on TRE, TRE.radio. The British driver needs to invest in all-season tyres. So that's a piece of motoring advice for you there. You know, your snow chains, etc. We'll be back with more Viewpoint after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And live to the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I just thought that the real alien life form should ring in this morning.
Good morning, and Nanu Nanu to you too, Alf. Good to have you with us.
And hi to Tim and Jerry.
Hi, Alf.
Very interesting. Hi, Alf. One of the points that you're making, all this, which is quite right, I've agreed with everything you've said about, you know, the building structures, etc., etc. Unfortunately, what happens is that people in power, people with money, abuse the position, and then things go wrong that should never go wrong, and that's what half the time. So you look at Turkey and you say, "Yeah, I bet your bottom dollar that there was some dodgy builders in there," because that's what happens, and because these people abuse their trust, and because the governments ignore the warnings from other people outside, you end up with Grenfell Tower. And you know, what a hazard that is right across the UK, these buildings. I lived in a tower block in East London, next door to Rowland Point, which was the one that fell down in 1968, 69. And they just said, oh, yeah, but it's this, that and the other. And it was an excuse. These buildings were designed in Sweden to go to 12 stories, and they were 21 stories high. It's because, you know, the local authorities, the government, the planning people, you know, they believed what they were being told by the developers, that these buildings were safe because there was hundreds of them in Sweden. But it wasn't until after the event somebody said, yeah, but they only go up to 12 stories in Sweden. Fortunately, in Rowland Point, nobody died, but the havoc was unbelievable. And then I lived in Balkan Point, which is next door, and I had skirting boards on the ceiling where they had to run RSJs through the whole building. So the cost of these tower blocks that was set off as part of slum clearance, because I lived just outside the docks, it was slum clearance for the two up, two down, no toilets, no bathrooms. And yeah, everybody thought, oh, these are marvellous, you know, wonderful things. And then after a while, people suddenly realise that these boxes that people live in become traps and become places where people with, you know, end up with mental illness and all sorts of things. So they decide, well, they'll have to knock them down. And then you see these wonderful pictures on the television, don't you, where the demolition bloke comes along and he's set up all his explosives and they push a plunger and the whole building collapses. They couldn't do that with any of the tower blocks in Newham because they were so reinforced, they had to take them down piece by piece. It must have cost millions, millions and millions. And that's all because it starts with somebody abusing their position. You know, we need to build homes quickly. We need to have the slum clearance. We need this. And then rogue people come along and just abuse their position and, you know, cut corners and don't do the right thing. And they must be doing it in collusion with the local authorities and the governments, because that's the way I see it. And that's what I lived in.
So, I mean, it's interesting you bring up Grenfell, because I think, is it 5 years now, isn't it, since the Grenfell disaster?
Yeah, well, it's not so much. If you set aside the emotional bit about what happened, then you have to say for 5 years, there's just been this ongoing conversation. I'll put it mildly, rather than a row. There's an ongoing conversation, but nothing is changing in the other buildings that were affected by the same cladding, other than an argument about who's got to pay for it to be stripped out. And all the time, there are, you know, more Grenfell Towers knocking around. The same thing could happen. I know they've put in extra measures and extra fire stuff, and, you know, the fire brigades are much more aware of what could happen in these things. But the risk is still there. And so for 5 years, effectively, the government has not come in and said, no, you will change the cladding. No, it is your responsibility. No, you will pay for it. Whoever it was, and that's because, you know, hand in glove, they're in collusion with whoever it was that designed this cladding, who must have known it was a chimney effect, must have known that, but ignored it because they said, oh, well, it will never happen. And then when it does happen, we all have to sit around like Muppets waiting for nothing to happen. You know, I'll say it again, why do they keep... I lived in a tower block. You cannot believe, and unless you are homeless, you cannot believe how poor it is to live in a tower block. The lifts were used as toilets. There were walkways through. People used to throw... Honestly, this is gospel honest truth. In the tower block I lived in, on two occasions, somebody threw a fridge freezer off the balcony because they couldn't be bothered to put it, drag it out of their flat and put it in a lift.
That's just anti-social behaviour, isn't it? Let's face it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what happens when you build these monstrosities, that people just go, oh... Oh, I'll just chuck it over the balcony. I mean, nobody ever parked a car underneath a tower block. And like I say, the block I lived in, you walked down the road, you could walk through the front doors, walk out the back doors, and you was in a... It was a shortcut to another road. Mm. So people used to use it. And of course, you know, past 11, 12 o'clock at night, it became the toilet. It used to stink in it. And then when the lifts went out... Blimey, I lived on the 12th floor.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, you get home with two bags of shopping each and the lifts ain't working. Christ almighty, it's unbelievable. They're still doing it.
Just thinking about that thing about three people throwing stuff off aft tower blocks. If you ever had the good fortune to walk past the Kensington Barracks when the Irish Guards were there during St. Patrick's, it was quite an occasion. Tim, did you want to come back on something there?
Yes, I completely agree with Alf about the inhuman sort of design of many of those blocks that were built sort of 70s and whatever. And he's got very near personal experience of why they don't work. Yeah. But I would also like to say, though, on the general point about buildings, and actually the shortcutism and opportunism of those who get these giant contracts to build these blocks, which is a fundamental dishonesty, the way they operate. But also that a lot of our, especially in Europe, of our cities and towns are historic. Therefore, almost all of the buildings are old. And so there was nothing to do with building standards to meet weather conditions or acts of God.
Yeah.
It was simply buildings that were built in certain styles. Well, you can't redo those. What we're talking about is regulation on new building.
Yeah,
and I completely agree with Alf. That's
got another call coming in. Alf, thanks for the call there. We'll speak to you a bit later, no doubt. Thanks for the call in. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint? You're live on TRE.
It's me again. It's interesting how many of the old stone structures have survived from time past. That's because many structures were built without a mortar or a foundation. They were built off the ground, which gives them a flexible strength instead of a rigid strength. Now, moving on to your earthquake and Japanese buildings. Japanese buildings are built on a roller-bearing system and in the foundations, which means instead of the building swaying and causing a lateral shear stress and breaking apart, the whole building can absorb any frequency, because what it's about is avoiding a frequency that rips it apart. Do you remember the London Bridge, whenever you started walking in step, and the bridge started swaying? That's what happens when architects get it wrong. But I don't want to dwell on that. What I want to dwell on is the human side, both in the greed and the selfishness when these contractors cream it off the top to compromise people's safety, but also in a humanitarian sense with this earthquake. I want to ask the question, why are we so big and good at reacting to pandemics and wars and less good when it comes to reacting to natural disasters, which are immensely more powerful than we are? Why are we so good at one thing, right, and so bad at another thing? I just want to leave that point of philosophy to ponder over.
Thanks for the call in there. If you want to get involved with today's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And looking at the that point that Jason brought up, I mean, Jason says, why are we so bad at reacting to natural disasters and bringing aid, and yet wars and pandemics we are? But you could take askance with that one, couldn't you? Because we've seen a huge outpouring of aid trying to get to the current situation in Turkey and Syria, apparently.
I agree. I'm not maybe. He knows something I don't, but I wasn't aware that we respond faster to wars. But they're not even, it's like apples and pears. Whenever there is a natural disaster, I perceive that a lot of nations rush to help with different types of aid, money, expertise, machinery, equipment. And it's all about, and then the logistics of transporting it all there. I mean, I can't think of a reason to suppose that we don't respond well.
I mean, that's the reason that, you know, we have things like the Red Cross, the Red Crescent are going into that, and you know, we're seeing pictures of tents being provided, aid being rushed out there. Spain, of course, there's even firefighters from Andalusia have gone over there, yeah, to help the situation literally within 24 hours, 48 hours.
The United Nations has a fund for this type of thing, that it provides cash.
We're going live to lines again. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's John.
Hello, John. Good morning to you.
Morning to you, sir. Right. The reason aid's not getting through is because of EU sanctions. If they just dropped their sanctions on Syria and Turkey, the aid agencies could get it in. The only soldiers, only army people that have gone into that country are from Russia. So, we are terrible. We see this crisis, but we're quite happy to spend billions of dollars blowing people apart in Ukraine and Russia. And at the same time, our sanctions are so important that Europe has to actually collapse and that Turkey can't be aided. There's your problem, EU sanctions. If they stop trying to do a regime change, this could actually happen. We could get the aid there.
Well, I mean, we're seeing aid turn up, rock up to Turkey, John. How do you mean the only soldiers we're seeing it are Russia? I wasn't aware of Russia sending any. I'm just checking to see, Russia's troops in Turkey.
Well, of course you weren't aware of it, because the MSM don't report Russia. But Russia is in there with troops helping the Turks.
John, thank you. Sorry, Joey.
Yeah. Can I just clarify? I mean, EU sanctions are about trade sanctions, but this whole thing is nothing to do with trade. So how would sanctions come into it? I'm confused.
Well, the sanctions are coming into it, and if you look at the aid agencies, and I even heard it on World Service, BBC, telling us that the aid people saying that the reason they can't get stuff into there is because of sanctions. EU sanctions. So, thank you, EU. 50,000 people dead here, 50,000 people dead there, and our sanctions are more important. So that's the reason.
I'm still confused. EU's Turkey's not in the EU. And how would sanctions say...
Turkey is sanctioned because it's a friend of Russia's.
And if aid is coming from Australia or the US or Brazil, how would the EU sanctions even get involved?
Well, you ask me, because they do.
I'm asking you.
Well, you're asking me, all right. Well, yeah. I'm telling you that the aid agencies have said that the sanctions are stopping them from getting stuff through. Now, I can't tell you, it's on your MSM media, so they must be telling the truth, that the reason that the aid agencies are saying they cannot get the aid through because of EU sanctions, or because of sanctions against Turkey and sanctions against Syria.
I find this very difficult to understand because...
Of course you do, because you don't actually look at the rest of the media, but I actually scan through these things and I find these things. Yeah,
because imports into Turkey, I mean, as they might be sanctioned, have nothing to do with voluntary aid, which is very often airlifted into certain localities and comes directly out of contributions made by worldwide donation. And is distributed through aid organisations.
So there couldn't be a problem then. There's no problem with getting aid into either of those countries, so why isn't it getting there?
Well, a great deal of aid has been given and received and is in place.
If you actually want to actually... The only thing you can actually send money to on GoFundMe are the White Hats. You can't send it to the Syrian aid agencies.
No, I suppose not. And why would one want to do that? I mean, because we have independent...
Well, one would like to do that because we don't want 50,000 people dying. That's why we would want to do that.
Well, I mean, of course we don't. But I don't see how the route by which one sends one's money has an effect on the death toll.
Well, it does have an effect on the death toll because they won't let it go through. If you put money into the GoFundMe campaigns that are for Syria, it doesn't get there. The only one that they will allow as GoFundMe, and it's another controlled operation, is the White Hats, who are actually terrible.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, I'm not going to argue about it. I'm telling you that's what's actually happening, and that's why it's happening. And you can pontificate all you like about it, but if the aid agencies could get their aid through by whatever means it came, then it would... I mean, at this stage, would it really matter if Russia sent in money? Would it really matter? No, it would matter to the EU because they're trying to change the regime. But it doesn't. I mean, aid is going in. Russia has got troops in Turkey helping people.
Indeed.
No other agency, army has.
Right. Thanks for that one, John. Always good to hear from you, as always. This coming in from the European Union's envoy to Syria, said early on Sunday it was not fair to accuse the group of failing to provide enough help to Syrians, for example, following the earthquake. The bloc and its member states had gathered more than €50 million to provide aid and back rescue missions and first aid in both government-held and rebel-held parts of Syria. It's absolutely unfair to accuse us of not providing aid when actually we have constantly been doing exactly that for over a decade. And we're doing so much more even during the earthquake comments that was coming in. The Syrian government, which is under Western sanction, has appealed for UN aid and saying all assistance must be done in coordination with Damascus and delivered from within Syria, not across the Turkish border into rebel-held areas. Some observers have accused Damascus of directing aid towards loyalist areas. Syrian authorities did not respond to a request from Reuters. Looking at some of the bits and pieces coming into the last couple of minutes, seconds of the first half of Viewpoint today, you can WhatsApp me, call +34 645 9967 95. It's the mainstream media, CNN reporting it. Bashir criticised Western governments in the first time advised comments, saying, I'm just seeing what he's saying then, accusation from mass murderer al-Assad. Right, then coming up to the end of the first half of this morning's Viewpoint, going to go to the national and international news, and after that we'll be back for the second half this morning with Jerry Hagan and Tim Stafford. If you want to comment on anything that we've said before, or you have a particular viewpoint you want to get across, please get in touch with us. The numbers WhatsApp +34 645 9967 95. Call me on 952 78 4000, email me at studio@tre.radio, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. National international news up next, and then back to the second half of Viewpoint.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
And welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio. Your voice in Spain, always live, always lively, with you for the next 52 minutes or so. Joined in the studio by Tim Stafford and Jerry Hagan. If you want to get involved with today's Viewpoint, one of the stories we've covered thus far or something that you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we go to the email studio at TRE dot radio. The aid agencies have complained about the Russian control of the Syria border, which affects aids getting into Syria. The Russians have two bases attached to Turkey who are supporting the Turkish government, and Turkey do not want money being sent into Syria as they believe it will be used by the opposition. The White Hats have earned the reputation of being similar to the Red Cross and the Red Crescent. Unfortunately, even in Turkey, there will be people ready to abuse the situation, just like the people trafficking in Ukraine. John always fails to see the everything is happening, and so has a distorted view that it is all part of a political change rather than a genuine organisation attempting to make sure that aid is used for the right reasons. I've got my bingo card ready for more. Meanwhile, David comes in from Kettering. Hi. Generally speaking, any state or issue aligned with or involving Russia receives very short shrift in Western, and especially UK media, because part of the Russia-Iran-Syria-Palestine alliance, and we all know who owns Sky and our politicians. They even wanted to ban Al Jazeera in the UK. Would that be a step too far? The WhatsApps we go. Good morning, Andy and Fuengarola. Your caller who stated that he'd heard it on the mainstream media seems to cherry pick what he chooses to believe. He's forever telling us that the mainstream media can't be believed, but then he quotes the mainstream media to validate his theory. This another one in from John, extract from The Guardian. US announces 180-day exemption to Syria sanctions for disaster aid. Assad regime still insists on handling all aid shipments to war-torn and quake-ravaged country that has been all but cut off from help. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. We might come back to that if you have some more comments that you want to throw into the mix. But let's move on from that, shall we, panel? Let's look at something. Tim's looking wistful. I think it's the look I'm going for. Let's move on from that onto another subject that came across, and we haven't used this word for a while. So brace yourselves, because I'm about to drop the B bomb. Yes, it's Brexit time, ladies and gentlemen, and a few bits and pieces here, because we're hearing about Brexit remorse. We heard about this secret plot to unravel Brexit. This is in the Daily Mail. Indeed, paper reported that a warning from Lord Fox after prominent politicians, business chiefs and ex-civil servants held their summit on EU relations. The Tory peer, who was a chief negotiator in the withdrawal agreement, said this secret conference is a further piece of evidence that many in our political and business establishment want to stay shadowing the EU. The Observer reported the cross-party summit set out to address the failings of Brexit. Condemnation of the EU-UK trade deal from British businesses, as well as a perceived rise in immigration levels into the UK, has resulted in the British public beginning to show signs of Brexit remorse. Thank you, Stephen Lord Frost. Thank you. Not Fox. Research by the British Chamber of Commerce found that more than three quarters of firms trading with the EU see the existing Brexit deal as no help at all when it comes to increasing sales or growing their businesses. In the survey of more than 1,000 businesses, 92% said, which were small and media companies, small and medium companies, said as many as 77 said the Brexit deal had not helped them to increase sales or expand. A list of demands the BCC has put includes a side deal with the EU to reduce red tape on food exports, as well as measures to ease VAT, working visas and other hurdles. The body is also pushing for a swift resolution to the controversial Northern Ireland Protocol dispute. It comes as Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has to contend with suggestions he wants a closer alignment with the EU, and with polling showing voters now consistently believe that Britain's decision to leave the EU was the wrong one. That was according to the New Statesman. Leaving the EU had made us uncompetitive with our EU customers, said one Scottish retailer. Exporting goods into the UK, into the EU since Brexit, excuse me, continues to prove difficult, said a manufacturer in the East Midlands, whilst another endorser said Brexit has been the biggest ever imposition of bureaucracy on business. So, Brexit remorse panel, immigration levels up, and businesses, this whole thing about swashbuckling British businesses freed from EU bureaucracy and red tape, doesn't seem to be coming true. Panel.
I saw the Daily Mail headline, and it's a kind of a typical Daily Mail headline when you're talking about Brexit, and the New Statesman obviously thinks the opposite direction. The reality is Britain's trade exports to the EU have gone down considerably. Well, say Britain, Northern Ireland's done very well, but the rest of the UK businesses are suffering. I can't remember the figure, but it's in billions that we've lost in trade with the EU. I'm not sure what immigration has got to do with this at all, because like immigration we're talking about are coming from the rest of the world, not the EU. But what went on in Oxfordshire is surely a reasonable thing to happen, because when you start a major new project, there's all sorts of unknown variables. You don't know how it's going to work out. So you should be examining what you thought was going to happen and what is happening, and checking, oh, that's not going right. We need to correct that. We need to correct this. This is going well. And it goes in a loop. You keep going around and checking and things going around. That's the way it's done in science anyway. If you have a really complicated thing like Brexit, and Lord Frost did a dud deal, some many people might think, especially the Northern Ireland Protocol, obviously he's got his own personal foot in the water on this one, and it sounds like he doesn't like people just checking what's going on, and oh, that didn't work very well. Let's think about what else we can do. Now, this is a cross-party group in that met in Oxfordshire. So David Lammy from Labour and Michael Gove from the Tories. They had Remainers and Brexiteers in there. I would think that's a reasonable, intelligent thing for a politician to do in the UK. So I approve of it. I'd like to see the Northern Ireland Protocol sorted once for all. It was a nightmare to begin with. If you know Northern Ireland, especially if you know the DUP, that was just never going to work. Never, ever.
You know, we were told, easiest oven-ready deal. Easiest deal known to man. That was the thing with the Brexit. It was going to solve all the problems at a stroke. And this was, you know, there wasn't any... Looking at the headlines of certain right-wing leading papers, any effort to tamper with the grail that is Brexit is seen as undermining, kowtowing to the evil EU.
And I heard politicians saying, oh, trade deals are easy. Of course you can do them in less than a year. Well, what we've got are like almost nothing apart from the deals we've got that we had with through the EU anyway. Trying to do deal with India, the farmers are not happy in the UK about the deal with Australia, and the US just isn't even interested.
Well, not only that, we're just looking at the reports about the fines being levied on water companies, because it seems this would seem to a casual observer to you pull out the EU bureaucracy on water levels, and suddenly you have sewage being pumped into the British waterways. And again, we're going to have, or the UK is going to have, the worst quality of water in the European region.
That to me, that was a huge risk. Not just water levels, but food safety, everything else. The thing about the EU, the great thing about the EU, is very hard to influence them, whereas you can lobby here in one country and have rich people. It was summed up very well by Rupert Murdoch. A guy from the Telegraph asked him, why do you hate the EU so much? Oh, he said, that's easy. If I go to Downing Street, they'll listen to me. If I go to Brussels, they don't listen to a word I say. And that is the power of the EU. It's very hard to have pressure groups lobby them and get their own way. It's much easier to do it on a country by country basis.
Yes.
Tim?
Yes, I was speaking to an Estonian private customs company whose business has taken off tremendously because everything that comes from the UK obviously has to be subject to duty, and so the difficulty of that is being managed by people such as he. And yes, absolutely. And as far as immigration is concerned, those people who lived primarily in cities and large towns who originally voted to leave Europe had this idea that their culture was being stolen from them because they saw people from other ethnicities or different religions taking space. And they weren't considering European citizens. The premise was fundamentally wrong, we can't doubt that. But trade negotiation, we negotiate with the nations across the world. When we find trade deals over time and they're altered and continually changing their dynamic. And that will be the way with our negotiations within, not from within the EU, but with the EU. And so it will be. That's the position we're in. I don't think there's anything more to be said than that. We can say, bemoan the fact that this has taken place. The referendums are always disastrous. And principally because those people who are given the right to vote in the referendum are frequently, it has to be said, ill-informed. And that's the case here, that it was a catastrophic allowance to allow a referendum. Cameron's fault, of course. And we can't argue with that either. And here we are. But it will, over time, as far as trade negotiation goes, settle down into something that becomes a normality. That is reasonably certain, too.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Professional. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. This was true before, talking about the water quality, before the EU referendum took place. Sewage in British waterways is called a Brexit benefit, Giles. But who would be stupid enough to privatise water in the first place? More of that British exceptionalism. Thank you for that. And it's an interesting point about the still 13% poorer. The interesting point about the disaffection with the immigration levels, because this is immigration coming from non-EU countries anyway, coming from
exactly. I don't understand the point.
Well, I mean, a lot of the point was, I mean, you had people saying, oh, well, we didn't, there was a perceived, British workers can't get jobs because there are Romanians, there are Poles, Polish plumbers, hospitality staff, et cetera, and this is, and suddenly that has been removed from the labour market in the UK, and that's why you're seeing problems, hospitality venues saying they can't get staff. Yeah. You've seen health professionals leaving European health, I've been interviewing Italian doctors who've been told to go back to their own countries, etc. It's given free rein to those who perhaps had these leanings and now feel justified.
The other big area of work that interests me is science, technology, the life sciences. And the pronouncements from some government ministers last week saying that that is a way to go promote life sciences. Well, actually, they're doing the exact opposite. They won't take part in the Horizon program, which is the biggest research program in the world. The AstraZeneca have decided not to build the next manufacturing plant in UK. They're going to move to Ireland. They're saying one thing about life sciences, but doing absolutely the opposite in real life, and drug companies are pulling out of the deals you make with the government to pay for it, because they're asking huge amounts of money. It used to be like 500 million a year now, and then the government want 3.5 billion, 4 billion a year from the drug companies extra on top of everything else. Well, that money would have gone for research. So if you're a research-based company, well, why would you keep working in Britain? So, oh, you want life sciences, but you're pushing them out and charging them extra tax. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
952-785-4000, excuse me. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. And what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Sharon Alicante.
Good morning, hi. Sharon. Good to hear from
hello,
you.
Hello. Just to say, I think it's in this government's interest to keep the EU debacle going for as long as they can. It's a wonderful distraction for the stuff that is going on behind the scenes with this. I don't want to be conspiratorial, but it's really suiting them to be able to Europe at every opportunity. So it's a fall guy, a fallback. Wasn't there recently a court decision didn't the UK government go to court to try and get the Northern Irish agreement changed, and they didn't succeed recently? Have I got that right?
I think it's going to court, and the bill, and it's on its way, but we think it's suspected that actually that will just fall apart because of this separate deal that's going on with the EU at the moment over Northern Ireland. So the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill is in process, but it probably will never come to pass because of a separate dealing with the EU.
I heard something went to court to do with Northern Ireland, and they weren't successful, but I was too busy to really notice what was going on. They can try for as far as they like. They're up against a mightier power. They won't succeed in this. I don't know what's the matter with the DUP. The DUP seems to be hell-bent on things not functioning properly. So I don't know. It's all a mess, isn't it? But thanks a lot.
Thanks, Sharon. Good to hear from you again.
The DUP thing, DUP thing steeped in history. They're basically working-class Scottish Protestants who were moved across by the king at that time to keep the Catholics under control. And ever since then, and they still celebrate 1690 and have marches. And if you, there's a politician once said, you'll never sort out Northern Ireland until you get rid of the marches, and the marches are still going. The DUP are the most loyal to the Queen group in the UK, and they insist the British, and I can understand the point, it's anathema to them. They now have a customs border with the UK, whom they're totally loyal to, and if you don't get rid of that, you're never getting the DUP back in Stormont again.
952-784-4000, the phone number, studio at tre.radio is the email, the Facebook page is Talk Radio Professional, you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 9967 95. The DUP are deluded religionists. Okay, then pull your punches there. Let's come in on the WhatsApps. Westminster voting intentions, Labour 47%, Conservative 24%, Liberal Democrats 10%, the Greens are 6%, and the Reform Party are on 6%. That's via YouGov. Can you say that's a reaction, do you think, to what's happening with the Brexit dividend, or the non-functioning of Brexit? Or could you just argue that people are just getting fed up with this continuing sort of ineptitude that we're seeing out of the Conservatives, and there still seems to be a sort of open civil war coming. Liz Truss, of course, making her comments last week. Rishi Sunak, judge me by my 1,000 days in office, not my 100 days, quote unquote. What's your thoughts on what's going on over there, panel?
I think the Tories are failing in the polls, opinion polls, for several reasons. Brexit is behind some of it, but I don't think people are thinking that far ahead. I think they're just fed up with inflation, cost of living crisis, strikes, most strikes since 1989, 2.5 million working days lost in the last 6 months, etc. And then there's the continually changing the leader and the fallout from various scandal after scandal that didn't need to happen. Any well-organised party would have made sure that didn't happen, and it's just infighting within the Tory party is causing this problem. And maybe remarkably, if after the next election, Labour were in power and the SNP were the opposition, that's a role the SNP never, ever thought themselves could ever be in.
Indeed, and well, I mean, that's a whole other scenario. Tim, any thoughts on that you've seen of that one?
Yes, well, for quite some time now, we've had a lack of what one might call true leadership, where a leader will inspire others in confidence, inspire the markets in confidence, and be tremendously optimistic and direct about how things can be improved. These people, career politicians, seem very frequently to be responding, reacting to events, rather than giving a clear and direct sense of where we're going to go. And, you know, that is the problem. I mean, what sort of shake-up is required? I mean, we're just picking ourselves to pieces in the UK, talking ourselves down. As used to be the case with some cities. Liverpool used to talk itself down all the time. Manchester too. And it's not constructive. You know, if one carried out one's ordinary life in that way, oh, I can't do this, I don't know what to do, eventually you have to actually make decisions and stick to them and be rigid about it in the sense that I'm going to aim at this and I'm going to find my way there. That's what we haven't got. Leadership.
9527 84,000, Jerry.
And I think a remarkable statistic is of the developed nations in the world, Britain's economy performed worse than Russia last year with Russia worldwide sanctions. That's quite an achievement.
Indeed. 9527 84,000. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint,
hello,
please?
Hello, Giles. I ring back again because it's a bit quiet show in terms of input. I don't have much to contribute these days. So when I do, I want it to be something poignant. Would you let me speak off subject at this late time in the show? Indulge me that.
Can
I hear you talking? Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Jason.
Yeah, I wanted to say something. My heart goes out to the Ukrainian people. I know they've suffered, as in their own way, the Russian people. And like many people, I was appalled that President Putin invaded Ukraine. And this is where things differ with me. I want this war to end sooner than later, not a long protracted war where soldiers die on both sides, and civilians and children. And the problem we've got, I feel that we're in what you call an entrenched war situation. One side wins the war on the ground, the other one fires missiles in. And there's no impotence for peace from the West. So in the same way, I totally question Putin's morality. Now I'm beginning to question that of the West also. There seems to be a strive for a long, protracted conflict, regime change, etc., when what we should really, really be doing is trying just as hard to find a peaceful solution. Putin can't stop fighting, because if he stops fighting, he will get deposed or worse, assassinated. The West knows this, right? They're hoping for regime change. What they should be doing is stopping this war. It's really easy in a studio or from the comfort of your armchair to be really gung-ho and bravado about this war, sending arms that kill soldiers, but you're not on a battlefield. And the problem is that in real time, soldiers are dying on both sides. And ask any ex-soldier that's worth his salt, with enough time to reflect, he will tell you that all warfare is a fool's game, it's abhorrent, and achieves no purpose. And we're already in World War III with our planet. We're fighting to save a stressed life support system on a planet which will one day kill us all. And while we're doing this stupid thing and fighting each other, we are not dealing with enough urgency and expediency at the problems that are facing us all in this world, Russian, American, you, I. And this is enough. We've got to really get with the program and ask ourselves, what are we doing? Where are we going? Are we going to escalate it to nuclear? Because there's always a chance. Are we so stupid after 3.5 million years of evolution? This is all we're capable of. And it's not just Putin, it's the West now as well. I want to leave it at that.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for the call in. 952-78-4000.
TRE.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Into the last 26 minutes or so of today's Viewpoint, joined in the studio by Jerry Hagan and Tim Stafford. David Kettering says, well said, sir, about Jason, about stuff happening with the planet. If you want to get your viewpoint across, any thoughts crossing your radar, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Okay, so Jason mentioned about the situation in Ukraine, wars being fought with the, you know, with the Ukrainian people, and also against, you know, the Russians and the Ukrainians coming to the first anniversary of the particular conflict. And of course, last week, Volodymyr Zelensky was over in both the UK and the EU, and he's called on the EU leaders to provide fighter jets and arms for the war against Russia. This was during his second trip since the war began. We have to enhance the dynamics of our cooperation. We have to do it faster than the aggressor. This is what he said. He was also earlier given a standing ovation at the European Parliament in Brussels. Several EU leaders have already stressed that a decision on war planes would be a collective move. Some are keen to avoid having the debate being played out in public. There's also concern about escalation and playing into Russian narratives. The Kremlin warned Thursday last week that the line between direct and indirect Western involvement in the conflict was disappearing. Zelensky over meeting, giving a speech as well in the Palace of St. James, very historic. People were comparing him to Churchill, etc. Sunak saying they were going to provide tanks to help, as Russia seems to be intent on starting and launching another offensive, as it's the 24th of February will be the first anniversary of the start of the conflict. Can we see anybody giving planes? I mean, it wasn't even a no-fly zone at the beginning of the war. Can any of these planes would be a serious escalation? Tanks already, if they do rock up, is going to be a serious escalation. And as I said before, Kremlin saying that this is going to blur the lines between, what was acceptable and what isn't acceptable. Jerry?
I can't see the planes going. There are several practical problems. First, it's not just a plane. You have to have a pilot, a trained pilot. You have to have ground staff. You have to support, etc. Now, I saw a few weeks ago the head of the RAF was up before the House of Commons Public Committee, and something I didn't know, to train a fighter pilot takes between 5 and 7 years. So if they're so complicated, you need to take that long to train them. Obviously, the Ukrainian pilots will have basic fighter training, but how long do you need to train them for in the new F-15s or whatever they're flying before they're actually viable? So that's a real logistic problem for me. Secondly, I can see Russia's point of view. That is escalating it. I know Zelensky would want it, but that's his role, to get as much as he can to help his people. But I can't see the West. These are very expensive planes, and if you lose one, it takes years to construct another one. There's a real problem with ammunition and tanks and everything like that, because we're sending them into Ukraine. Possibly not get them back again. You're depleting your own army, and it takes years to get a new tank in when you give one away. So the escalation there to fighter jets is just stretching the credibility of my imagination.
Tim?
Yes, a second reference to this Estonian character who I was speaking to recently. He was also a reservist in the Estonian army. And he told me that British servicemen are training Estonians in the use of missile systems and so on. I completely agree with Jerry on the piloting of whatever aircraft might, or almost certainly won't, be employed or given donated to the Ukrainian cause because of the great difficulty of operating systems as complex as that and the training required. But would it escalate it? Why also are we actually advertising or making public these issues? I mean, in the Second World War, for example, nobody would have said, oh, tanks are coming from the USA or systems from the USA. Mm. Just thought we'd let you know. No, and why?
Because I suppose the thing is, technically, we are not at war with Russia. That is the thing. Our Second World War, obviously, because we were allies, were at war with the Axis powers.
Yeah.
But we, despite people saying it's a proxy war, and yes, we are. Officially, NATO has not declared, has not declared for one side or t'other in the situation in Ukraine.
Yeah, there's certainly that, these are machines, and it's the people who fundamentally count, and who's operating the machines? It is Ukrainians in this case. It would be fundamentally different if our personnel were involved. It's difficult to believe that, whereas it might take a couple of weeks to train in a missile system, that anybody could be run a complex aircraft such as has been suggested, fighter aircraft, just like that. Let's say it's unlikely. And there is a difference, of course, between declared war and undeclared, shall we say, assistance.
Mm. Yeah, having observers on the ground, etc. Yeah. I mean, sorry, Jake.
There's a Russian joke. Two Russians are talking, and one said to him, what's this war about? Well, it's Russia versus Ukraine and NATO and the West, and that's what it's all about. It's Russia versus them. So how's it going? Well, we've lost X thousand troops and armour and everything like that, and the Ukrainians, they've lost this one. Well, what about the West? Oh, they haven't turned up yet. That's the Russian view, the Russian man in the street view of how this war is operating.
One of the other things is the fact that the Ukrainian Air Force has been using old MiG fighters. I mean, they're not using American fighters, because they used to be part of the Warsaw Pact, the Soviet army. So it will take a while to train them in this in whatever aircraft's coming. Because the last time I looked, were an awful lot of MiG fighters in the air forces of Europe / the West.
Not any operating ones, anyway.
Yeah, and this whole thing about tanks as well, that's going to be, that's fine. And, Rich said he's sending over tanks. Spain said they're sending over 6 tanks. The Americans said they're going to send over Abrahams tanks. But one of the things that somebody made the point is, well, they're not going to send over the latest high-tech Abrahams Mark, whatever it is, 5, because should it fall into Russian hands, that gives them, technology and firing systems and insight into how these armies will operate. 952-78-4000. Took a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. No, we're not talking about Strictly Come Dancing.
To contact Tari, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're getting some news coming in as well. Breaking news this morning, or coming this morning, was this. I know we don't normally do sports stories on a Viewpoint, but I spoke to Peter Bennett, who was at the Champions League final where Liverpool fans were blamed by the French authorities of the chaos that ensued before the Champions League final. He had a very, very different experience to what the French police were saying, saying they're troublemakers, and it appears that his fellow fans have been vindicated after serious shortcomings in a report that came out this morning. Jerry, you want to have a word about that?
Yeah, it's shades of history here where the police and UEFA got things so totally wrong. It could have been a disaster, but they blamed the Liverpool fans. The Real Madrid fans all got in, but I watched on TV and saying the Liverpool fans were causing trouble. Well, I could see the journalists and the TV cameras going up and down. They weren't causing any trouble at all. They were just patiently waiting to get in. Some of the local youngsters were trying to climb over the fence to get into the into the stadium, and the police used tear gas. But I saw the Liverpool fans urging the boys to come back down off that wall, over off that fence. They and then to hear later on the police saying it was a Liverpool fans' fault and made up stories about tickets that were false tickets, forged tickets, sorry. And then it was on the media, well, not media, social media later on with silly tickets like, please let my son in, you know, he's a good boy, that kind of ticket. But in fact, according to this review, that wasn't true at all. It was just their systems were inadequate to cope for this because the UEFA set up the whole design for a home team against an away team, which is a different kind of way to organise when it's two away teams in a major cup final. And they got completely disorganised. Now, the problem with that is that's just UEFA. But the Olympics are going to be held there in a couple of years' time.
Well, it's not only that, it's the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup, you know, the only one that matters, basically. And that's happening at the end of this year in France.
So if you can't organise one big sporting event, how come you're allowed to run others?
One of the things with this was the fact that I was listening to Radio 5 Live and they were getting very concerned about the situation because this is Liverpool, if it was, you know, and Liverpool has a tragic history in terms of large finals or large sporting occasions. We think of Heysel, we think obviously of Hillsborough as well. But there were warning signs about this in the Euro 2020 whatsoever final in Wembley the fact that you had once again had gangs of youth trying to get in, you know, without tickets. And there was large scale drinking for a start in London on that day because it was an England fight. England had got into the World Cup final, as we know. English couldn't handle their drink at the best of times. Here we go, live to the lines. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's me again, Giles.
It's John.
Slightly more relaxed this time.
Okay.
Okay. As Jason, very good. He actually is beginning to wake up to the fact that the West is actually the part of the problem. It is the problem. It's not Russia going into Ukraine. As I said last week, and I don't think he really took it on, in the Second World War, Russia built 84,070 tanks. They were building them at the rate of 1,200 a month in 34s. So you're dealing with people who really, I mean, I'm not particularly pro-Russian and I'm certainly not pro-Western, but the fact is that Russia will decimate NATO if it actually ever turned into a real war, if NATO ever got off their butt and got in there, because simply they have everything to lose and nothing to gain by actually surrendering. And you know, your Russia now has tremendous support amongst the rest of the world. And what's happening is the Western alliance, if you want to call it that, need to actually collapse the world economy or their economy so they can bring in a digital country and control you all.
Right.
And the Russians said, no, we don't really want that. We're actually more interested in sovereign countries, and sovereign countries around the world are joining up with Russia.
John,
what's going to happen is the West is going to be cut off, and Russia will actually decimate them.
Right. Okay. Russia. You see, the thing is that you're talking about the Second World War when it's the Soviet Union, okay, and Stalin, etc., and he's got a huge amount of manpower, etc., so they can throw the whole weight of the Soviet Union against it, and that's not applicable anymore.
Why not?
Because Russia is not the same as the Soviet Union, for a start.
Well, no, Russia isn't the same as the Soviet Union. Russia is a sovereign nation. The Soviet Union was communism.
Doesn't have, but it can't mobilise the factories in the same way as it could during the Second World War. Jerry was coming on.
The other aspect of that is that in the Second World War, Russia was invaded by the Germans, so they were fighting for their own country. But here's a little psychology of warfare over history. If two nations fight each other, if the if the middle classes of one of the countries is not engaged with the outcome, they never win. Now, the middle classes of Ukraine will be engaged because they're defending their own country, but it's hard to see any evidence that the middle classes of Russia are really actively enthusiastic about invading Ukraine. A huge exodus of young and educated Russians out of Russia is not a good sign, and I'm not sure that Russia really has the ability to win in the end.
You don't think that Russia has the capacity to field 500,000 men if it wants to conscript them? They've got a lot of peasants still there. They've got a lot of farming people.
Yeah,
if you go into like the outside of the major towns, you've got a lot of people who are still basically Soviet-minded.
First of all, I just
think you don't play with a country who has hypersonic missiles that can hit England in 3 minutes and are unstoppable. I just don't think you should do that. I think if they want to do anything, they should just pull back now and just say, right, NATO, Ukraine, we will not allow it into NATO. We will not put our troops into there. We will understand the borders of Russia. And Ukraine was Russia until it released it, right? It released it in 2014, and they then spent 8 years trying to kill the remaining Russians that are left in the country
somebody's
in Donbass.
Somebody's come in and said...
It's a no-win situation. They're not going to give up. If they necessary, the last man alive in that, it might be Putin, is the last man in Moscow that pushes the button to release havoc.
Okay.
On the West.
Right. I mean,
That's it. If the West wants to actually survive, and it's not going to survive, it's failing, it's crumbling. The EU is crumbling. It's got massive debts. It can't possibly manage it. It's failing dramatically. And it's failing dramatically because it's a dying regime. And the regime that is dying is the globalist totalitarian regime that's been trying to take it over. And Russia's not going to have it, and neither are the rest of the world. They don't want to be part of a totalitarian state where you own nothing and you're happy. They don't want to eat crickets in their food, which is right. being injected into the food. And believe me, I know you guys don't see the same stuff as I do, but 2 years ago, everything I said that has happened in the last 3 years has actually happened as I said it would happen. And if you want to ignore it, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I'm 71. I'm unlikely to be under a nuke. If I was, it wouldn't matter. It's only 10,000ths of a second and you're gone. But the fact is, I do actually care for my grandchildren. And I care for your grandchildren as well.
Well, my grandchildren would be quite an interesting concept, John. But no, I mean...
To say, do you not think that knowing, if you know the way that Russian politics operates, then the mere thought of Putin being the last man standing is pretty far-fetched, because he's bound to be removed by somebody from within the Russian political parties anyway. And somebody's come in saying,
they will be more gung-ho than he is. A lot of the top generals are complaining. And you don't watch the same things as I see.
No, I don't.
A lot of the top generals are complaining that he's getting too soft.
Yeah, well, the Russian generals would do that in a sort of juxtaposition of what we saw last time around. And the problem is that the commitment point and the kleptocracy that has existed in Russia has meant that they haven't got a decent fighting force to put forward. That's why, even though you've got a Russian army that, yes, has millions more men, but they're just cannon fodder at the moment.
Well, that's okay for Russia. I mean, they're perfectly acceptable to that. I mean, it was Graham, what was it, Lindsey Graham, who said... We're going to keep feeding the Ukrainians money, 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 because the Ukrainians will fight to the last Ukrainian. He didn't say the Ukrainians will fight to the last Russian, the last American. And I tell you something, you're not going to find America very willing to go into this very soon. That's imploding anyway. Biden's completely destroying the place. So, you know, and he's also under the control of the Chinese. And if you're fighting Russia... The Chinese, India, Saudi Arabia.
Those sovereign nations with their fine record of democracy and standing out for human rights, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not saying anything about their sovereign. I'm not condoning their actions. I'm just saying
that you're fighting people who have decided they don't want to be part of the New World Order.
Indeed.
And who, who are going to take it down.
9527843. John, I was going to have another call coming in, but thank you very much for that. We segue seamlessly between Liverpool fans at the European final to that. But John, always good to hear from you. 9527843000, the phone number, studio@tre.radio. In the why would Russia want to? Is John Harper a Russian, a Chinese agent on a balloon then? I'm not pro-Russian. I'm definitely not pro-Western. Hi, Charles, says somebody. Yeah, hello. Russia has a total population of 145 million. A little less than the combined population of France and Germany. It doesn't have a massive pool of people to draw on for military use. The biggest threat comes from nuclear capabilities. He's going to use capabilities in a corner, I believe he is. That's an interesting one. And a final call. Morning, call, you're live on TRE.
I think I've got verbal diarrhea today. I've been getting abducted, won't I? Listen, I don't agree with all that John Harper said.
Right.
Some of it I do. It's good to have an opposing viewpoint. Question, how come Tony Blair, right, was not a war criminal, right, when our country illegally invaded Iraq and Bush was a hero? Depends who you are. This is how the world works.
Right.
It's a hypocrisy, right? That's one point. And the other point is that...
All right, got another call coming in. Thanks, Jason. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name, where are you calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, Charles, Steve.
Steve, what are you doing?
Give our regards to Notre Dame, John, wasn't
you? Yeah, indeed. Yes, go on. Off you go. Off you go, Steve.
When people start talking about all this conspiracy of the World Economic Forum, etc., 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 I've got a friend of mine that's also been indoctrinated. Ask them the question, why? Because nobody ever does that. Why would they want to do this? Because if what they're saying in this conspiracy theories comes to pass, that means that the so-called people who are running the WEF have lost all their income, have lost all their wealth, they've lost everything because we're now no longer providing that for them. So when people come on spouting this conspiracy theories, and so why would they be doing that? Well, because so-and-so. Yeah, but why would they be doing that? And there is, in the end, there's no answer to that question because it's all a load of hogwash, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, yeah, but you know, you'll be told what to eat. You'll be told you'll be happy because you'll have nothing, and you'll be happy for that. That, Steve, that's why. And they'll be in the Maldives or I don't know whatever they're doing, because that's the ultimate game. So we all are happy little zombies going automatons going about. Oh, thank you very much. Going about our miserable little lives, Steve.
Yeah, but then they've got nothing to gain from that, have they? Because if we're all automatons, they've got nothing anymore. So it's a load of rubbish. It's all absolute. I won't say it because I'm live on air.
Exactly. Steve, as always, good. And you had your volume set to 11, though we blasted all our ears there. So thanks for that one. No problem at all. Thanks, Steve, for that one. Right, and also almost out of time. Once again, we went from Liverpool fans to the New World Order. So there you go, Jerry. That's
proof that we are a
broad church in viewpoint. Right, thanks to my guests, Tim Stafford.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And also Jerry Hagen.
A great pleasure, Charles. Thanks.
This programme will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Thanks for your calls. I'm back tomorrow with Let's Talk at 10 o'clock, and Stephen Ritson is up next.
Expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.